We come now to our 26th study here at the Puyallup Camp 1982. And this is the 7:30 study on our Tuesday study evening.
Here at the Puyallup Camp 1982.
Now go back again
to our continuation of study of the seven last plagues.
Tuesday evening.
We take up in great controversy we left off in our afternoon study
of the seven last plagues.
And this brings us down to the
take up in great controversy we left off in our afternoon controversy.
And
when
this brings us down to the
people have had this tremendous awakening,
five in great
and they now have an altogether different view of things from what they had before.
Had this tremendous awakening,
page 655,
they now have
in the book Great Controversy.
Different view of things from what they had before.
Ministers and people,
page 655,
see they have not sustained the right relation to God. Now, I can't read the sentence without my mind going back to our first studies on Revelation chapter 1 verse 1, which began our series last Thursday night. And we there saw that Jesus Christ, by receiving from his Father the revelation of himself, which he in turn gave to John, to the angel, maintained a relationship with his Father, Son to Father. The Son being the receiver, and the Father, of course, being the source and the commander.
With his Father, Son to
and
Father.
In doing that, Jesus Christ laid down a pattern, an example for us to follow, and showed that only by maintaining that relationship could the people of God walk successfully with him.
And
now today, of course, the vast majority of people in the world are not concerned about maintaining this relationship. But the time is going to come, as the sentence says, when ministers and people will see that they have not sustained the right relation to God. They see that they have rebelled against the author of all just and righteous law.
They see
the setting aside of divine precepts gave rise to thousands of springs of evil, discord, hatred, iniquity, until the earth became one vast field of strife, one sink of corruption. This is the view that now appears to those who rejected truth and chose to cherish error.
This is the view.
Let's come back now to that is the very beautiful and accurate presentation of God's law which is applied to us in this paragraph. We have here, first of all, a cause which in turn is followed by a development or an effect.
We have here, first of all,
I'm going to read the sentence again. I'm going to ask you to state what is the cause and what is the effect. The setting aside of the divine precepts
and what is the effect
gave rise to thousands of springs of evil, discord, hatred, iniquity, until the earth became one vast field of strife, one sink of corruption.
What is the cause,
hatred,
element in this
particular
the earth became one vast field of strife, one sink of
very
corruption.
Good. The setting aside of the divine precepts,
element what did this do?
It gave rise to something.
Very good. The setting aside
and
of the divine precepts,
that something
what
of causes thousands of springs
it
of evil, discord,
something.
Hatred, iniquity,
and
until the earth became one vast field of strife, one sink of corruption.
Discord. Hatred,
this is the view that now appears to those
who
rejected truth and chose to cherish error.
This
now, obviously, if these people at that time will finally come to understand the relationship between cause
now,
and effect,
if these people
and will then
recognize will come to
that the setting aside of a divine precept was the cause of all their trouble,
and will then recognize
it follows them that today,
that the aside
when they don't share that view,
the cause of all their
they must
troubles.
Have a different idea of what
it
causes
them
all their troubles.
When they don't
first of all,
share that view,
do men today realize that they live in a troubled world?
What causes all their troubles?
They certainly do.
First of all,
on every hand
do men
they recognize
they realize
the fact that
they live
stated
in a troubled world.
In fact, I remember one or two years back when things were going very badly in every field of human experience. There was riots and economic problems and unemployment and bad weather conditions.
There was riots
and this was particularly true, of course, in old England.
what we call the mother country, at least we do in Australia.
This was particularly true.
In fact, my understanding of mother country long ago, perhaps.
The what we call the mother country, at least we do in Australia.
But the commentator said we used to say things will get worse before they get better. But now he said we said they'll get worse.
The commentator
before they get still
said
worse.
We used to say things.
That was the pessimistic view that this man had of the future prospects of the human race.
That was the pessimistic view that
now men know they have trouble, but who do they blame for
those
future
troubles
prospects of the human race
and offended God?
Right?
And men know they had God, but who do they blame for those
and
troubles?
And the present view is as follows.
God.
I shall now reread this sentence.
And offended God
in the light
and
of what men presently think
is
the cause of their troubles.
I shall now reread this sentence.
They will say,
in the
an
light
angry,
of what men
a wrathful,
think is the cause
and
of their
offended
troubles.
God is the
they
one who
say,
has brought upon them
angry,
thousands of springs of evil, discord,
and
hatred, and iniquity
God,
until the earth
is
became,
the one who
has become
upon them
one vast field of strife,
evil,
one
discord, hatred, iniquity,
and God gets
until
the
end
became,
has become.
But the time
one
is coming when men will recognize
corruption.
That not God,
God
but their own disobedience
the time
is
coming
the source
when men will
of all their troubles.
That not
and that time
God,
comes, the character of God and his law will be recognized even by the most wicked people upon the face of the earth, and not only recognized, but also acknowledged
by the most wicked people upon the face of the earth.
Now I read further,
not only recognized, but
no language can express the longing which the disobedient and disloyal feel for that which they have lost forever.
No language can express
eternal
longing
life.
Which the disobedient
men whom the world has
for
worshipped
that which they have
for their talent
forever,
and eloquence now see these things in
men
their
the world
true
has
light.
Worshipped for their talent
they realize
and
what they have forfeited by transgression
their
and they
light.
Fall at the feet of those
they
whose fidelity
they
have despised and derided and confessed that God
and they fall
has loved
at
them.
The feet of those whose
that's
the picture
we have on the
board. Despised and
at this point of time when the voice of
God
turns the captivity of his people they fall down and worship at the saints' feet.
At this point of time when the
voice
of God
doing what prophecy do
they
then fulfill?
They fall down and worship at the saints' feet.
Remember?
By so doing, what prophecy do they then fulfill?
Which chapter was that? Remember?
And which chapter was that?
And which correct? It was the Philadelphian a promise to the Philadelphian church, and you find it back then in Revelation 3, so
correct,
about verse 11.
It was the Philadelphian
a promise
verse
to the Philadelphian
10,
church.
No,
and you find
nine.
It back then in Revelation 3, so about verse 11, don't you?
Now
read a little further 10, before we go on to Revelation 17,
nine,
which is a further explanation of the
now, read a little further before we go to Revelation
17, which is
the
a
people see that they have been deluded.
Sixth and seventh plagues in particular.
You ever had the pleasure of
the people see that
explaining
they
some very, very precious gospel
you ever
truth
had the
to another person?
Of,
and the person listens and he says,
explaining
oh, I can
some
see
very,
that.
Very precious gospel truth to
doesn't
another
does it
person.
Make you feel good?
And the person listens and he
certainly
says,
does.
Oh, I can see
when
that.
A person can see it,
does
it means comprehension has dawned upon their minds. And they can see for themselves
see it,
the principles
it
and truths you're talking about.
Dawned upon their minds.
If you go out today and try and tell the average person on the street
about.
That all this world's troubles are the fault of the people themselves,
tell the average
will they
on
see
the
it?
Street?
Not at the present
all
time.
All this world's troubles are the fault of the people themselves. Will they see it?
Not at the present time.
Oh, yes.
That's true.
That's true.
And there are certain other sections
oh, yeah.
too, and men have come to
that's
realize
true.
That certain causes
that's
produce
true.
Certain effects.
And there are
because
certain
they're
other
forced
sections
to, I guess.
Too, and men have come to realize
take, for instance,
that
the question of lung cancer.
Effects.
Men
because
have come to realize
to,
that this is the direct
take,
product of smoking.
The question of lung cancer.
Because of this, of course, a lot
men have come to realize
a lot fewer people today
smoke
than used to.
Because
of many, of course.
A lot fewer people today.
They accuse one another of having led them to destruction.
Now, of course,
human nature doesn't change, does it? They accuse
one another
back in the Garden of Eden when Adam sinned, who did he blame?
Everyone but
does it.
Himself.
Back in the Garden of Eden when Adam
and here in these
sinned,
last days,
and
folk realize they've lost everything, they'll blame each
himself.
Other for having led them to destruction.
And folk realize
but
they've
all
lost
unite
blame
in
each
heaping
other
their bitterest condemnation upon the ministers.
But all
unfaithful pastors
have
prophesied new things.
Upon the
they've led their hearers to make void the law of God and to persecute those
things.
And keep it holy.
They've led their hearers to make void the law
now,
of God.
Now, in their
and
despair,
to
these teachers
confess
before the world their work of deception.
Now,
the multitudes are filled with fury. We are lost, they cry, and you are the cause of our ruin. And they turn upon the false shepherds.
They cry, and you are
the very ones that once admired the most will pronounce the most dreadful curses upon them. The very hands that once crowned them with laurels will be raised for the destruction. The swords,
the very hands
which once displayed God's people, are now employed to destroy their enemies.
The swords,
everywhere there is strife and bloodshed,
are now employed to destroy their enemies.
Before I read further
there is
in this particular chapter, I'd like to go back now to the Bible.
Before I read further,
and we'll move on to the 17th chapter of the book of Revelation.
And
in doing so, we are not leaving the study of the seven
of the book of Revelation.
Because Revelation chapter 17 is simply a further and deeper discussion of the fifth through seventh plagues in particular.
And deeper discussion.
This is verified in chapter 17, verse 1.
Seven plagues in particular.
Let's note these words together.
This is verified in chapter 17, verse 1.
And there came one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials,
and there came
and talked
one
with me, saying unto me, Come hither,
which had the seven
I will
vials,
show unto thee what?
And talked with me, saying unto me,
the
Come
hither,
of the great
I
whore
will show unto thee
that sitteth what? Upon many waters.
The judgment
now
of the great
whore. Now specifically then, what was John
that
to be shown?
Sitteth upon many waters.
The judgment.
Now specifically then, what was
great
John
whore
to be shown? In other words, this was not to be simply and only
the great whore.
A revelation of the great whore.
In other words, this
but
was
of
not to be simply and only
of the great whore.
A revelation of the great whore.
Now you tell me,
the judgment
what
of
is
the
judgment
whore
of the great whore?
Now you tell me,
the seven last plagues.
What is the judgment of the great
whore? Which three?
Five, the seven
six
last
six and
plague
seven.
Particularly
those three.
Five.
Therefore,
six
what
and
is
seven
Revelation 17 all
those
about?
Three.
Therefore, what
fifth,
is Revelation 17
in particular about?
Or, in other words, the doom of the
fifth,
papal
sixth,
system
plague in particular.
Now,
or
I mentioned
words,
earlier in the week that of all the seven
system
trumpets, the one which I fear is the most fitting.
Now, well, I mentioned
I
earlier
all
in the week
that of all the seven trumpets,
the one which I
fear
is the most fitting
is that part of
the
sixth
trumpet,
which involved
the
rise of atheism in France and the
which involved the
virtual extermination of the Roman Catholic system
and
from
the
France, be replaced, of course, by the
extermination of the Roman Catholic system
religions of that time.
Replaced, of course, by the atheistic
we will find as you move into Revelation chapter 17 that we will
find as
portrayed to us here another
absolute
revolt against the papal system,
to us here
so that this destruction shall spring forth from within and not come from without.
So that this destruction shall spring forth from within and not come
so
from
let's
without.
Now commence a study of the judgment
good
of the
then
great whore which sits upon many waters.
So let's now commence a study
a
of the judgment of the great whore which sits
very
upon
good
many waters.
Or a prostitute.
Another word for whore.
A whore
harlot
is a harlot
good,
or a prostitute.
Or a prostitute.
But this, of course, is not in
a
the physical, but in the
a harlot
spiritual sense of the word.
But this, of course, is not in the physical, but in the
so John then was told that he would be shown the judgment of the great
so
whore
John then was
which sits upon many waters. Let's write them, that little
the
picture down here.
For
start, there's the whore,
sits upon many
and here
waters
are the many waters
that
upon which he sits.
For start, there's the whore, and here are the
now the next verse goes on. Next verse goes on to say, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication.
Next verse goes on to say,
and the inhabitants of
the
earth have been made drunk with the wine of
her
fornication.
And the inhabitants of the earth
next
have been
starts
made drunk with the wine of her fornication.
What does the word so indicate?
Next verse starts with
that,
the word
that
so.
What is now going to follow
the word so indicate
is the fulfillment
that
of the statement made by the angel.
He said,
is the
come
fulfillment
and I will show
the
you
the
judgment
of the great whore.
He said,
so,
come
to accomplish
I will
this
show you
the promise
the
judgment
of the great whore.
So promise
to accomplish
he now
this,
carried John away
or,
in the spirit into the wilderness.
He now
and I
carried
saw
John away in
a
the
woman
into the wilderness.
Set upon
and
a scarlet covered beast full of names and blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns.
Beast full of names and blasphemy.
Well, did the angel
kind
of miss his way
somewhat?
Because he said, I show you a whore
well,
sitting on
the
waters.
Kind of
instead, John was shown a woman
sitting
upon a scarlet covered beast.
Sitting on waters.
The angel loses way
John
somewhat.
Shown a woman sitting upon a scarlet covered beast.
Did the angel lose his way somewhat?
Mm-hmm.
The angel did not make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Because
the angel
a whore,
did not make
first
a
of all, is a woman. So there we find that
the whore and the woman are the same.
So there we find now then, that the whore and the woman sits, are the
sits
same.
Upon a scarlet-covered beast,
now then that beast must be another symbol
upon a scarlet what the water symbolises.
Then that beast must be another symbol.
Here is the whore equals the woman, and the waters equal the beast.
Here is the whore equals the woman.
Waters is a symbol, as verse 15 points out.
The beast is a symbol.
Waters is a
symbol. Both of these things are two different symbols of the same thing.
And therefore, both of these things are two different symbols.
Now, at this point, I'd like to make an observation, which I think is quite pertinent.
Now, at this point, I'd like to make an observation.
Link it back to Daniel, and look at Daniel 2,
and
7,
and 8, Daniel,
and so forth. We find
look at Daniel 2, that
Babylon,
and 7, and
in both
8,
its
and so forth.
Political,
or I should
Babylon,
say, civil
in both its
department
or powers,
or I should say,
and religious
civil
department
or powers,
pictured by a single beast.
And
there's no separation of these two, things in two separate categories.
There's no separation.
The same is true in Revelation 12, Revelation 13.
But here in Revelation 17,
we find that the spiritual side, which is the whore, or the religious side, is symbolized by one symbol, and the water symbolizes the peoples and nations and kingdoms and tongues.
And the water symbolizes
the state power,
which puts into effect the commands of the church power.
Which are two different departments
of the church power
that make up the papacy.
So remember, papacy is
always the marriage between Jezebel and Ahab, right?
Between church and state.
Is always the marriage between Jezebel and Ahab.
When you've got those two things combined,
between church
and state is carrying out the church's requirements and demands,
then what have you got?
The state is carrying out
the church's
requirements and demands,
whichever way you like to put it.
What have you got?
And in this final
presentation
of Babylon the Great, we find that the two different departments, church and state, are separated,
and symbolized by two separate and different symbols.
We now move a little further in Revelation 17.
By the way,
I mentioned,
Heads and horns situation
in Revelation 12 and 13.
Please don't turn it up.
Heads and horns situation.
Let's see their memories alight now.
Please don't turn it up.
What was the picture back in Revelation 12 so far as heads and horns were concerned?
There's always seven heads, and there's always ten horns.
There's always seven
heads. Beasts under consideration.
There's always ten horns.
The beast of Revelation 12, the beast of Revelation 13,
and the beast of Revelation 17.
The beast of Revelation 13.
Now all three of these
have seven heads,
and all three have ten
horns. All three of these
have seven heads, and all three have ten horns.
Right.
Which was which?
Very good. Revelation 12.
And which
crowns are on the heads.
Very good.
Revelation 12.
Revelation chapter 13.
Where are the crowns?
Very
Revelation
good.
Revelation chapter 13. Where are the crowns?
And now
very
in Revelation
good.
17, please
plus.
Don't look.
Where are the crowns?
And now in Revelation 17, please don't look.
In Revelation
where are
17.
The crowns?
Some say heads, some say horns.
In Revelation 17.
Some say heads, some say horns.
You find that in the verse we just read, I think, verse 3.
So he carried me away in the spirit in the wilderness, and I saw a woman
sit upon a scarlet-covered beast, full of names and blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns.
Keep it in mind, it's a very significant point, which we'll pick up a little later in our consideration of this prophecy.
And the woman was arrayed in
purple and scarlet color,
and
decked with gold and precious stones
and pearls,
having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations
and
filthiness of her fornication.
And
upon her forehead was a name written, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth.
Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the
earth. That's quite a title.
That's quite a title.
So now move on, and for the first time we find a symbolic name, an actual symbolic name, not just a symbol, but a symbolic name.
A
woman is a symbol.
You see what I'm saying?
That Babylon is a symbolic name.
A woman is a symbol.
Right.
That Babylon
so
is
now
a
I won't put Babylon the great mother of husbands. I'll just put the simple
now
word.
Where
the Bible says Babylon the great, mother of harlots and abominations of the earth.
Babylon the great,
Now we would expect very obviously that there would be a symbolic name provided now for those waters or that beast. As we continue to identify this woman and in turn the beast which carries her. And move on now to verse 15, which says, the waters which thou sawest, where the horse of it are peoples, and multitudes and nations and tongues.
And let's move across here then, and we'll put underneath this line,
people power.
People.
And so there are the peoples of the earth, nations and tongues, which give their support to the Babylonian system in the last days. Now,
in the last
we don't have it supplied here in the chapter particularly, now, but we know
we
perfectly what of course
in the chapter
that great Babylon will be the threefold union between Catholicism and Protestantism and heathenism, all bound together by what?
And What binds them all together by what?
Right, spiritualism.
What binds them all
together?
So let's
put here the word union,
right,
the final great confederacy of forces.
The word union,
which is supported by the people. And this is the union, the
which
union of the religious
the
people,
elements.
And this is the leadership.
The union
which
of
makes
the religious elements.
The image of the beast. And verse 18, it says, and the woman which thou sawest is that great city,
and the woman
which reigneth over the kings of the earth.
Which reigneth over the kings of the earth.
And this city reigns over the kings of the earth.
And this city reigns over the kings of the earth.
Those waters symbolize those waters and that beast.
Those waters
symbolize the peoples of the earth, which are the kings of the earth.
Symbolize the
kings of the earth, which are the kings of the earth.
Underneath that city which rules over them.
Now we're looking now for a symbolic name, not mentioned in the chapter.
We are expected to
because
understand what that symbolic
whore,
name is.
Whose symbolic name is Great Babylon.
Sitting upon those waters, the symbolic name of which must be.
Sitting upon those waters, the symbolic name of which must be. Please keep still. Those of heaven, please answer loud and clear.
What has the symbolic name of the waters be upon which Great Babylon sits?
What must the symbolic name of the waters be upon which
one name? There's only one name.
It's as obvious as can be. Well, think. Take your mind back to ancient Babylon. What waters did she sit on?
Take your mind back
Euphrates.
To ancient Babylon. What waters did she sit on? Euphrates.
As I said this afternoon, you cannot separate Euphrates from Babylon. And just as ancient Babylon sat on
and was supported by the great river Euphrates,
which kept the great city alive. Modern Babylon
sits upon the peoples of the earth because the water symbolizes people, and therefore the Babylon must have a symbolic name in the Old Testament, the Euphrates.
The city was called
Babylon.
As
we read this afternoon,
just as the ancient river was dried up
to
make way for the kings of the east, so
these
people will be dried up in the last days.
People
to bring about the downfall of Babylon and thus make the way for Christ to return.
If
you think type and antitype, you'll have no problem, of course, identifying symbolic names in the book of Revelation.
Very good.
That picture's clear, isn't it, so far?
No problem.
Let's move on then. We're reading
and,
out verse 6 where it says, and I saw the woman
drunken
with the blood of the saints
and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus,
and when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel,
Quite frequently, in fact, always throughout the book of Daniel, you find a certain pattern of revelation.
And it is that God first of all has given
through the prophet
a vision. And the vision contains certain symbols, certain details, but no explanation.
None whatsoever.
Just to make sure you've got this picture clear, let's go back to Daniel in the second chapter.
It's
very important that we recognize the organization that God uses to bring about these revelations. Now, between verse 31 and verse 35 of Daniel chapter 2, we have a step-by-step description of the great image.
How much interpretation is given in those five or six verses?
Right, none at all.
Right, none at all.
When the record of the vision has been given, then the explanation begins.
As verse 36 says, this is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king.
Verse 47, now we have interpretation, but how much vision do we get in these?
None at all.
In other words, first there's the vision complete.
In other words, then comes the explanation complete.
Then comes the explanation.
And you'll find that you can match the elements of the vision, the head, the breast, the silver, and so forth, with the explanation.
And there's nothing given in the vision except it is in the vision.
The same is true of Daniel 7. And Daniel 8,
through Daniel 7,
and now in Revelation chapter 8,
17,
and now in Revelation
John
chapter 17,
is given a vision between verses
John
described
is given
between
vision
verses 1
between
and 6.
Between verses 1 and
then the rest of the chapter
in the
is
rest
devoted
of the
to explaining what was given back there in verses 1 to 6.
What was given back there in verses 1 to 6.
Now then, Let's read then verse 7 of Revelation chapter 17.
And the angel
said unto me, wherefore didst thou mark?
I will tell thee the mystery of the woman, and of the beast that carrieth her, which had the seven heads and ten horns.
What's the angel promised to do?
To give an interpretation of the vision which previously had been given. The angel said, I will tell you the mystery of the woman. When you start to read the angel's explanation, your first reaction is that he has made the mystery more mysterious. Let's read it in verse 8.
The beast that thou sawest was, and is, the beast that thou sawest was, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition, and they that dwell in the earth shall wonder whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was, and is not, and yet you've had a good explanation.
No.
Now verse 9, and here is the mind which hath wisdom, and here is the mind which seven heads of seven mountains, on which there were seven kings, and there were seven kings, one is, and the other is not yet come, and when he cometh he must continue a short space, and the beast that was and is not even here is the eighth of the seven, and goeth into perdition.
There then, a little bit of careful study will begin to unravel the study when you begin to unravel the prophecy really is.
Now first of all, in verse 8,
the beast of thou sawest was,
the beast of thou sawest was,
and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into
perdition.
When you have an expression like is and was and will be, you've got to have a reference point.
For instance,
if we go back to the days of Christ, when Christ was upon this earth,
we can say at that point that Christ, if we're talking from that reference point, Christ is a man. He was not a man.
And he will be a high priest in heaven.
Right?
But from 1982, we will now say, from our reference point, we'll look back and say he was a man upon earth,
he is a high priest,
and he will come as a glorious king. as they glorious
and very obviously, of course, the reference
very
point
obviously
chosen
the reference point
determines
chosen,
what was or is or will be as the case
is,
may be.
Or will be as the case
very fundamental
may be.
And obvious, isn't
that's
it?
That's very fundamental and obvious.
So in order for us to understand
what
beast are being spoken about
what
as,
beast are being, spoken
as
about
being
as
in the past,
as being in the
as
past,
also being present and
as also being present and
we
have,
to make, we have to make up our minds
we have to make up our minds
given
on the basis of the evidence
what
given.
Was the reference point
what was
John was observing these facts
which John was observing
that's very important
that's very very important.
Now most commentators, of course, take the position that John was taking from his own point of view.
When we study the works of a prophet,
do we find that they always spoke from
their own point of time,
or were they sometimes moved far into the
future
and spoke from that point of time?
I'll give an example.
From my word to the little flock,
from
my
word
first
to the little flock, publication
never produced, and this
publication never produced,
in which we do have
in
a prophet
speaking from
a future point of time.
Let's turn now
to page 19. And this was a vision
and,
that
this
wife
was
given.
That Sister White was given.
Well, that is, she wrote to Elder Bates
well,
from Topson
Maine,
April 7, 1847, which of course was well over 100 years ago. And in this vision,
and,
she was given a view of last events.
She saw the image of the beast being set up.
Very pressure brought to bear upon God's people.
And now she talks in present tense about events which are still in the future.
Certainly they were in her day,
and
they
still are in our day.
She says, in the time of trouble, we all fled from the cities and villages, but were pursued by the wicked.
The houses of the saints were destroyed.
They raised the sword to kill us.
They raised the boat to kill us.
Then we all cried day and night for deliverance,
and
the cry came up before God.
The
sun came up, and the moon stood still. The streams ceased to flow. Dark heavy clouds came up,
and so on and so on
and so on and so on and so on.
And in this particular paragraph, which is the one after my first thought, I might read.
She's talking of future events as if they were past.
What's her reference point? 1847.
It's a future point, isn't it?
So that's a very simple example
of how prophets, very often picked up in time and projected far into the future, and then begins to describe things that were and will be.
And
if we're going to understand
what the prophet is saying,
what must we determine?
That reference point.
So let's now determine the reference point.
It's not very difficult.
Let's go back now to
verse 3 again.
And in verse 1 the prophet was told, come and I will show you the judgment of the great horde, and so in order to see that judgment,
where did he have to be carried?
Into the wilderness.
And when he got to the wilderness, what did he see there?
He saw the whore seated upon the scarlet-coloured beast.
Now, if he had to go to the wilderness to see the whore,
where must you have been?
She must have been in the wilderness, right?
In other words, if anybody wants to see you, where must that person come? Where you are, in this room.
Okay.
Not up in Canada, or down in Portland, or in Twin Falls.
But right here in this room.
We now ask ourselves the question, what does it mean for the woman to be in the wilderness?
Is she always there, or is this but a temporary sojourn, and not a permanent one?
If we go back to Revelation 12,
we find then that when the woman brought forth the man-child, and the dragon stood there to devour that man-child,
where did the woman flee after the man-child was taken up to heaven?
To the wilderness.
All right then, so now we've got that information.
Let's note it down on our board
this evening.
Between the years
5, 3, 8, to 1798, the 1260 years of papal supremacy, the Church of God was then in the wilderness. And she went in as a result of the persecuting powers that sought to destroy her. Therefore, the church was not in the wilderness when Jesus Christ was born, nor during the apostolic period. But when this persecution began, that's when she found herself driven into the wilderness. So obviously, what does it mean to be in the wilderness?
To be in oppression,
to be persecuted,
to be the tail and not the head,
to be under and not above.
Right,
right.
Now, during the time then, when the church was in the wilderness,
was the papacy also in the same place?
But she was?
No, if you say that, then you're saying
that during that same time, the papacy was being persecuted and pushed under,
whereas in actual fact,
she was on top, wasn't she?
Right. Now, what about John Owen Day? When you think about the great Roman power, which was the woman then, was pagan Rome suppressed and driven away from her natural habitat, or was she likewise on top of the world? She was on top, wasn't she? So when did the papal power go into the wilderness?
Very good.
In 1798, and thereafter, we find that the papacy was driven into the wilderness as a result of her own sins, and there she is in the position of oppression and obscurity
during that period of time.
She went into the bottomless pit of the wilderness after 1798. And at the same time, of course, the church has been coming out of the wilderness. Today we are not in the wilderness, we are out here in a position of freedom. And we're no longer, of course, in a miserable place of obscurity. Therefore, what was John's point of view?
What point of time?
What is his reference point of view when he says the beast
is in the wilderness,
as she was and is not, and to come out of the bottomless pit? What's John's obvious point of view?
After
1798.
Pardon?
Well, you have a double picture, that's your problem.
I always say, if you don't learn, I'm a dumb teacher. If you do, you're good.
So you can't lose,
can you?
Now, is this clear?
I don't think it is.
Is it clear?
Right. You didn't give me the impression it was.
So don't be afraid to speak up. We're not scared of each other.
All right then.
Now. To further confirm this, let's go down to verse 9 and 10. I'll come back to verse 8 in due time, but I want to confirm this point a little further. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. Now, in Bible prophecy, what does the mountain symbolize?
A kingdom, specifically.
Back in Jeremiah 51 verse 25, your partner says, it talks about Babylon being a destroying mountain. Jeremiah 51:25. And in Daniel 2, remember there are two mountains, the one from which the stone was cut and the one into which the stone grew. And what does Daniel 2 specifically say those two mountains symbolize?
God's kingdom.
Right? So mountains symbolize kingdoms. And so verse 10 says, and there are seven kings, five are fallen, and one is, and the other is not yet come, and when he cometh, he must continue a short space. Okay? Now, to identify these kings, again, what must we have? A reference point. A reference point before which five had fallen, at which one still remained, and the other was not yet come. Okay, we need a reference point. Now, what is the reference point used by, I'm not sure about Uriah Smith, the Tadaji Bunch, I think Uriah Smith too. What is the reference point that these men used? John's own day. Now, if we use John's own day, then which five kingdoms had fallen? Take them back from John's day backwards, if you like, to count them very easily. Obviously, in John's day, had Rome yet fallen? No. Had Medo-Persia? I should have said Greece, I beg your pardon. Greece, first of all, Greece fallen, Medo-Persia, Babylon,
there's three, Assyria and Egypt. Right, that's 5-4, if we take John's own day. But then we have a problem, because we have one that is, and in John's day there was still, that one obviously was pagan Rome, and the other which had not yet come would be the papacy. But what about the lamb-like beast, and what about the scarlet-coloured beast? They're embedded, aren't they? So if we take John's day, we'd have to say five are fallen, one is, and three are yet to come. But does the Bible say that? No, it doesn't. Now, remember this afternoon, or was it yesterday, in Revelation 12, we recognized that a prophet does not begin before his own time. A prophecy is a prophecy. So what is the starting point then of all the great prophecies of Revelation? Pagan Rome. Because that was the power that ruled the world when these prophecies were written. The same as back in Daniel's time, what was the starting point? Babylon. Because that was the ruling power at the time when the prophecy was given. So if we look at that rule, and then we come again and take this same starting, this same reference point, namely after 1798, we now ask ourselves the question, which are the five which have fallen? And it's very obviously Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, pagan Rome, and the papacy. How many is that? Five, right? One is, now what is the satanic form which took over from the papacy in 1798? We studied this in Revelation chapter 11 the other day. Atheism. Very good. And what is the other one which has not yet come? Well, the lamb-like beast, right? Apostate Protestantism and the lamb-like beast. So we have the lamb-like beast, which actually becomes amalgamated into the scarlet-coloured beast, which is Great Babylon, that final confederacy of the lamb-like beast of apostate Protestantism, this union we talked about in this previous outline. And that picture, of course, fits perfectly into the whole thing, from that point of reference. So then, the five which have fallen are Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, pagan Rome, and papal Rome. The one which still was at this point of reference after 1798 is atheism, and the one which is yet to come is this final union, which will be led by apostate Protestantism, the lamb-like beast of Revelation chapter 13. Very good. Well, our time is almost gone, so let's see how much more we can make in the last 2 minutes. Let's come back to verse 8 again. And here it says, and the beast that thou sawest was and is not. All right, now, it also says a little further than it is, which seems like a contradiction, but it isn't a contradiction really at all. Now, the beast which was not after 1798 was the actual papal form. So, and yet that beast which had the deadly wound in 1798 was yet to rise out of the bottomless pit, and when it did, what would his fate be? He would go into perdition. And what does perdition mean? It means hell fire, in short. It means to go into total and complete destruction. Now, moving down to the rest of the verse, it says, and all they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life, the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. So even though it says it is not in the sense of being a world power anymore, and yet it is in the sense of his lying there, wounded, but ready to rise again, come out of the bottomless pit, and play its part in the final scenes of human history. There I must leave it tonight.